you are joining We the People Radio. You're joining me in my car, and Bill happens to be at a trade show. So I'm Aaron Ryan, but the only live person in the studio is Bob Martin. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Aaron. You of course, are live. You're just over the phone at the moment.
Over the phone, because today's going to be kind of a different show, not really different as far as topics go, but for those of you who've been listening in the last year or two, we've had a friend who calls periodically. His name is Mike Adams. He always signs into the chat room as Horse Creek Mike. And Mike was not very old, but he passed away in October this last year. And just because of where he lives and the configuration of his property and the way things were situated, no one wanted to make that public until his, things were taken care of. He was a big gun collector, okay? I'll just say it. That's not really a surprise. Anyway, he had the best reloading room ever. You know, it was like going to the store. Anyway, I met Mike when we started the Tea Party up in Wairika, so back in 2010 at least. And he, initially it was like, oh, who is this guy? He's such an interrupter. And then he was such an interrupter, like Mr. Know-It-All. And the more I talked to him, probably the second or third time I met him, we chatted after the meeting, and he knew a lot about a lot of things. Mike was a Coast Guard veteran, very involved in veterans' issues. He utilized the White City facilities up there, so he always kept me up to speed on what was going on with VA on that end of the world. We had lots of chats about politics, and he was a big supporter of the radio program, always was a supporter. When we used to do the annual fundraiser, Mike would come down to Reading, and he would stay at our house. So, of course, then in the next public venue, he would make sure and tell people that we slept together, which was just Mike's sort of humor. Of course, Bill was there, but, you know, anyway, it just was always funny. He just was a funny guy. So, anyway, one of those people who's gone too soon. But I look back in the archives because he was a suction dredge miner and really gave me a tremendous education in mining. I learned a lot from Mike over the years, and that was really his passion. So I thought, gee, you know, I'm headed up to his memorial today in Fort Jones because he was also the president of the Protect Our Water Group up there. And I thought, gee, I should play one of those old shows. It was 5 years ago yesterday that we aired that program. So the show today will be one that Elizabeth Woodward and I co-hosted back in the days when Elizabeth was there. But the information is all still good.
That was back when Bill was getting his coffee.
That was back when Bill would stick his arm into the recording room, you know, the actual radio apparatus room, but he wouldn't come in. He would never come in. Yeah, you're right. That was kind of funny. Now Bill chatterboxes on the radio with us all the time.
You never know, he had Mike fried at one time.
Just by way of, sneak preview for next week, I have a national security expert out of Chicago, actually, who is working with the company that's securing the border. They've got the oversight to secure the border and build the wall and do all that good stuff. And so for all those of you who've been told that building the wall will do nothing and will never secure the borders, Mr. Bruce Moran would beg to differ, and he'll be giving us all the info next week. I think we might also have a couple of people from his company, but that remains to be decided. But that's the topic for next week on the, 12th, I guess?
Next week would be Sunday, March 12th, yes.
There you go. I'm a lot smarter in my car than I am in the radio studio, apparently. I should always do the show from the car. Alone, so I'm not, you know, distracted by all of you.
We'll have to get you an ISDN line.
Yeah, I'll have to put on some little blinders there so I don't get all fidgety with you and Bill there in the studio. Well, thanks a lot for getting this all put together for us, and I hope everybody enjoyed a little bit more about mining, and fond farewell to our friend Mike Adams.
Well, Aaron, thank you so much for that introduction, and all of us here are sorry for the passing of Mike Adams, but we can honor him by replaying his program on
exactly.
The topic of mining that, like you said, was 5 years ago yesterday, March 4th, 2012.
Exactly. So, fond farewell to Horse Creek Mike, who won't be joining us in the chat anymore, which is really unfortunate because he was always really funny. So have a great day, and it's a lovely drive. It's a great time to drive to Fort Jones.
All right. Well, how's the weather heading up that way?
It's actually quite nice. It was it rained on me. I was in Wairika last night, of course, because I always seem to do this trip repetitively. I was up there for work. So it was raining and monsoony, and today it's sunny and nice. They said they had snow, though, a couple inches in Fort Jones, and they had an inch in Wairika today.
All right. Well, drive safely. We'll see you back here in the studio next week.
Absolutely. So there you go.
All right.
You got a memorial, you got a weather report, and a sneak preview next week.
All right, very good. Thank you, Aaron Ryan, joining us live via cell phone as a way of introducing our replay from 5 years ago on mining with special guest, the late Mike Adams.
Sunday morning, because what else could you possibly be doing but listening to We the People Radio with your hosts Aaron and Elizabeth and Bob Martin, our sound engineer.
They might be sleeping.
And our master of music. I can't imagine doing anything else on a Sunday morning.
Exactly.
Bob?
Seriously. Bob, say something.
Should we tell them?
Tell them what?
Go ahead, tell them.
Tell them this isn't really Sunday morning.
All right. That's why we don't sound like we just rolled out of bed, took a fast shower, and just speeding across town.
We did take a fast shower and speed across town, but we hadn't just rolled out of bed.
Yeah,
God,
it's in the afternoon. It's in the afternoon.
No, this is actually Wednesday afternoon.
So we're doing this ahead of time so that we can make sure and get the information for today's show on Sunday to you, because the comment period for suction dredge mining ends on Monday. And you're going, I don't even know what she just said.
Well, you know, we've been talking about the assault.
And we know you're going to say that.
Yeah. And we've been talking about
suction and drudge mining?
Yeah, we've been talking about the government.
I thought you said sucks and drudge.
Okay. No, okay. Suction. It's a good thing I don't have braces or any other appliances. Suction dredge mining.
Yeah, so the all-out assault on the timber industry came first, and then it was farming and agriculture. Mining's been taking a bullet right along.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about the other ones, but we've never talked about mining.
Well, the miners get forgotten because there are not a lot of people who have personal experience with mining.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just frankly, they're
right.
They live a lot of times remote. Hey, is Mike in there?
And I think our layman, I mean, people out there listening probably think about somebody with a gold pan going out and swishing around in the water trying to find a few flakes of gold. But this is kind of bigger than that.
And there's more to it.
But, you know, if you read Atlas Shrugged or watch the first portion of the movie that came out last spring, they deal with that issue a lot in the first third of
Atlas. Yeah, that's true.
Atlas Shrugged.
That's true. And there are quite a few people who know about mining that we could have had on, but Mike Adams has been on here before speaking about the monument and some other good stuff.
It appears that we lost him momentarily.
Okay, so forget about Mike. We're over Mike. I was wondering, I'm like, he's pretty chatty. Why didn't he say anything?
So
ladies and gentlemen, some things never change, so whether we record in the afternoon or on a Sunday morning.
We still lose our guests out there in Never Land. I mean, we cut people off on a regular basis. So it's that, and then what were we saying?
Sometimes
this show is good for pissing people off and scaring the you-know-whats out of them.
So somebody asked me today, you know, hey, what do you have to do this afternoon? And I said, I got to go, you know, talk crap about the government and, you know. There's so much, did we find Mike?
We did.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, before we head back that direction, honestly, for people who are thinking, gosh, you know, there's just so much going on, what can I do? You had better get together with a group of people in your area that are working on things. I don't care if it's a Tea Party group, a 9/12 group.
Yeah, and you know what? It doesn't have to just be a Tea Party group.
No.
There's a lot of coalitions out there. There are a lot of grassroots movements that are starting up that are fighting all the issues because they're coming from every direction. So there's always somebody you can team up with, and that's the quickest way to get involved.
And it's a numbers game. It isn't about expertise. It isn't about spending 24 hours a day together. It isn't about, you know.
Although some do.
Yeah, well, sometimes it happens.
It does.
But it's about numbers, because like Monday we had here in Redding,
in Shasta County,
we had a rally we needed to do for a landowner who's having trouble with the county. That was at 1 o'clock,
and then at 2 o'clock we had a meeting at the Board of Supervisors because we are suspicious that some of their department heads have absolutely nobody overseeing what they do,
and that affected that is in effect what came out of the rally at 1.
And then at 3 o'clock we had a meeting that involved the Forest Service and local recreation coalitions partnering up to stop this onslaught of closing all the public lands to the taxpayers. Every single one of those meetings was well attended by concerned citizens from different coalitions who cross over and work together. But every one of those meetings, which were all recognized in the newspaper, were a direct result of citizen input and citizen fire.
Exactly. So a lot of times, you know, the divide and conquer thing works both ways. Sometimes when people want folks not to show up, they'll schedule a meeting at the same time they think that they're all going to be doing something else. But, you know, 200 people at the rally up at Anselmo Vineyards and like 50 people at Board of Supervisors just an hour later. And then you said like 20 or 30 people in the other one. So, you know, depending on what size your community is, you may be able to turn out more more folks than that. But like yesterday, there was a meeting about wolves, bringing wolves into California. Just one more service the government provides. That was happening in Red Bluff, but the notice was fairly short. I just found out about it yesterday morning, and I found out about it while I was 4 hours north. 3 hours north, really, listening to a whole different thing about water. But somebody down there went. So we got a good report of what was going on. Somebody was able to weigh in for the landowners. And any more folks, if you live in town on a small piece of ground and you think, oh, all this private property stuff is kind of, you know, it's not really a problem that's going to come to my front door.
It's already in the neighborhoods. It really is.
It is.
Because what's happening is water is going to be the number one issue. I mean, I heard it said that recently that water is as valuable as oil. And there's water that runs through every neighborhood. I mean, it could be a culvert from a recent subdivision that's been built. It could be you might have half an acre of land and have a dry creek that just happens to be a part of your piece of property, and anything like that draws the attention of the water boards, the state water boards, the
Army Corps of Engineers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would be very, very surprised. The other thing is, too, I don't think anybody would be surprised at the idea that if part of your society loses their liberty, how long does it take before everybody loses it?
And never think that they'll never come for you. I mean, that's
naive.
Just
silly.
It's naive, and you're doing yourself a serious disservice to ever take that attitude that you're going to ignore what's happening to your neighbor, because as long as you keep your mouth shut, you're safe.
Yeah.
Not.
Or the bureaucracy won't find you. So it's just a matter of being involved in it, being, you know, weighing in. Yes, we have to have some rules. We don't advocate the overthrow of the government, although, you know, kind of attractive.
And given that that's one of the tenets of this show is limited government, not no government.
And people, you know, if we're in a representative republic, then people can't adequately represent us if we don't, for one, let them know what we think.
A coach needs a team.
Exactly, and those are our tax dollars at work. We should go be smart about how they're being spent. So should we take our little break early and then come back and do a long chat with Mike?
Well, we can certainly do that.
And we will. All right. So Bob's got all sorts of fun mining music for you, although we haven't talked mining yet. We're coming back and we're talking about mining. So grab a cup of coffee. You've got 2 minutes. Thank you very much to the advertisers who support KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Well, I was born to coal miner's daughter in a cabin on a hill in Butcher Holler.
Listen, we forgot to mention to find out all about today's guest and to find out everything about We the People Radio and a list of our archived shows from October of 2010.
Uh-huh.
Go to wethepeopleradio.us. Everything you need to know is right there.
Yeah, and if there's stuff that you'd still like to know that we haven't done yet, you should email us. Definitely email us and let us know. We take tons of requests. We like to hear from authors and mm-hmm. speakers. If you get emails from different groups or whatever and they're referencing material from somebody who sounds interesting, I would hope that you would let us know because we have the ability to get them on and hear the whole story. So, Mike Adams, are you in there?
I am here.
Oh, we've bridged the technical gap. That's so great.
Yeah.
Okay, so talk to us about the... Well, tell folks how you got involved in mining. Give them a little background for you.
My little background? Okay, well, let's see. I was a rock collector for years, and one of the specimens I didn't have was gold. And so one spring I decided I would go out and try to find a gold specimen to go in my rock collection. And that was about, somewhere around 2000. And so it got to be so much fun every spring when the weather would open up, and prior to my work starting for the year, I'd come down here to California and do some gold mining.
Because you lived in... Alaska?
I lived in Washington at the time, kind of. I was a gypsy running around. I lived in Washington with a Texas driver's license in my pocket.
Another rule breaker turns to mining.
No, and driving all over the country, working all over the country. But one year they sent me from the West Coast to the East Coast four times. Uh-huh. Back and forth. But at any rate, in about 2002, the economy kind of went into the toilet, and there was no work that year. And so rather than going off to work, I stayed and mined gold all year. And since then, I have been mining gold for a living. Up until 2 years ago when they shut me down.
And now when, got to always remember that we never know where people are, what people's experience is, but when you say mining for gold, I think people have seen the big, hydro mining, where they basically shoot water at a hillside and mine that way. There's the one guy in a little gold pan standing in the river.
And that's, I think, what most people think of.
A lot of folks think about that. But we're talking, at that time, were you involved in the suction dredge mining?
Yes, I was involved. I immediately got into, I started with a gold pan, and I found, yes, that you can find a little gold, but you're not going to find enough anymore to make a living at it, okay? The old days of going down to Two-Bit Gulch and panning enough gold to buy yourself dinner is long gone. And I happened to have fallen in with a group of guys who were suction dredge mining to start with. And since that is the most efficient way of recovering gold out of a river, that's what we were doing.
So, okay, describe for people what suction dredge mining looks like.
Okay. You have a set of pontoons or floats, and we have a sluice box, which is, it varies, but it has a set of riffles in it, and you run the sand and gravel across these riffles, and the gold settles out behind the riffles. The riffles create a little eddy current, and the gold drops out in that low pressure zone. You have an engine, typically, that draws clean water out of the river and runs it through a Venturi nozzle, and then a hose connected to that nozzle, and that hose goes off to a swivel nozzle when you suck gravel up off the bottom of the river, goes up the hose, and then across the sluice box, and then back into the river.
Okay.
Okay. Does that paint a picture?
Sure.
Yeah.
So how much water do you need, and about how much, if you were going to get started, I realize like anything else, it'd be like, I'm going to go be a mechanic. There's a basic set of tools you need, and then you can obviously go up from there. What's the investment like, and then
And then we also have to talk about the property, because you can't just buy all the equipment and then go to someplace that has water and then go mine.
No, that's very true. Let's argue this. It's very much like farming, okay? Just because you went to the store and bought a tractor and a plow doesn't mean you can start plowing any place you find. You have to own the property. In 1866, the Congress granted the right to locate minerals on federal ground. Now, there are a group of minerals that they listed. Gold was one of them, silver, lead, mercury. If you found these minerals on public ground, you could stake a claim and claim them as yours. Okay, now there was, this was extended to U.S. citizens and people who had declared their intent to become U.S. citizens. Okay, so now this act of, you had to discover it, you had to do the paperwork, et cetera, and then it's yours. Now, at that point in time, it's your private property. Okay, just as you didn't necessarily own the ground, but you owned the minerals that were in the ground. Okay, so this is a real private property. So, simply because you own a tractor doesn't mean you can come farm my ground. You have to do so only with permission.
That's a great example.
Okay. So there are clubs who have claims, who have bought up private property and will allow you to mine on their property for joining the club, or it varies from club to club as to what the restrictions are, but there are clubs that you could join, so you didn't have to go find your own.
Okay. So Mike, given the current political climate, are people able to keep their claims? I mean, I know that we've got the list of initiatives or bill proposals in front of us, but what's going to happen to people's claims? And are those claims carried from generation to generation?
Some of the claims are carried from generation to generation. They can be inherited, they can be bought, they can be sold. And there are some claims that are still held by families. Their grandfathers or great-grandfathers staked the claims, and they still hold them. There is a requirement in the law for the claim to be valid. There's what they call the Prudent Man Act or Prudent Man Rule. And it says that for a claim to be valid, that a prudent man must be able to earn a living from the claim.
Okay, so you can't have the claim as a hobby?
Well, you could.
Okay.
But so long as a prudent man could earn a living.
Okay.
Didn't say he has to. He just has to have the ability to. In other words, there has to be enough locatable mineral to support a man.
Interesting. And in your case, a man and a couple of dogs, but, you know, we're not going to nitpick that.
A man and a couple of dogs, yeah.
So in order for a prudent man to be able to make a living, I mean, if we're talking about a real business and income versus expense, would these proposed regulations kind of chip away at that prudent man's ability to make a living?
Well, actually, these regulations make it so I can't make a living.
Okay,
but yes, and let us argue that my claims were in an open area, all right? Yes, there's a couple pieces of legislation, AB 120, which put the five-year moratorium on it. It says a lot of things.
And that's the fee structure.
But one of the things it says is that this program must be entirely funded by the miners.
So the fewer miners that are able to participate in the program, that puts a bigger financial burden on the remaining miners.
Well, beyond that, they've said only 1,500 of you can participate in the program.
Now, is this...
Okay, now, every 5 years you have to do a new EIS.
Which is an environmental impact.
And it's the state that will do it. And we know how they like to spend money. So there's no constraint on their pocketbook. They'll spend as much as they need.
That's because it's ours.
And then we divide it, and then, of course, you've got to hire, they'll argue we have to hire dedicated wardens, I'm sure, and we'll have to buy them a truck, and we'll have to pay for the fuel, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And they have to go to special warden school.
The cost of this program is going to be so outrageous that nobody can afford to make a living at it. It will strictly be a rich man's hobby.
And that's kind of what's happening to everything. Now, real quickly, these regulations, are these state or federal?
These are state.
They are state, okay.
Let's not get into it, but there is an argument that the state does not have the right to regulate this. We believe that this is, many of us believe, that since it was the federal government that granted us these rights, it's the federal government that must regulate it. You know, that the state is an effective overriding a right, okay?
So if, let me see if I understand this correctly. In order to retain your claim, you must be able to be a prudent man that could make a living.
That makes the claim valid.
That makes the claim valid. So really, if you come full circle, if the government can regulate you out of the ability to make a living, therefore your claim becomes invalid.
That's right. Well, let's take my claims. Let us assume, okay, that they didn't close it. They put that as one of the listed closed waters. We'll probably touch on that a little later. But they made the restrictions so draconian, okay, that I can no longer mine them. Now, my claims were mined back in the 1800s by the first explorers that came into this country. They were mined again in the 1930s. They were mined again in the 1950s. And here we are in the 2000s mining again. In truth, we're picking up the scraps and crumbs of what others have left us. Okay? And we're still able to make a living. You know, albeit it's a skinny living, it's a living. But if they take away this method from me, now I can't make a living from my claims, and therefore I lose them.
So it's kind of a through the back door and around the corner kind of method for eliminating the claims.
In a way, yes. Except that they haven't done it through the back door. They've gone through the front door. They've said, this water is closed. You can't mine it.
And that was like two years ago?
Well, 2 years ago, there was a moratorium across the board. Totally across the board. There were allegations made that we were doing irreparable harm to the fish. And so it went to court, and the court ordered Fish and Game to do another environmental impact statement. Okay? Now, Fish and Game didn't have the money and didn't have the desire. So they drug their feet, and they said, oh, well, we don't have the money, so that's a good excuse. Then the court, you know, gave them a deadline. And since they were going to go past, they actually went past the deadline. That's when the legislature stepped in and said, look, if you're not going to do it, we're going to shut the whole thing down. But they're still under court order to do the EIS. Money was found. They started the program. But rather than showing that we did any harm, they just alleged that we did harm. And required an EIS. It's arguably a taking in having shut us off to begin with for these past 2 years. But
and when we come back, we need to take a quick break, but we need to tell folks EIS is an environmental impact statement in case you didn't know. And when we come Mike, we got to let folks know about how much that costs since I think of a statement like, hey, sit down and shut up. I mean, that's a statement. it should have been an environmental impact statement, slightly longer and more, I guess if I made that statement to someone I worked for, it would cost me probably as much as it would cost you to file your EIS. There may be some connection. I think we may have unraveled it. In the next 2 minutes, you guys can contemplate that. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People Radio at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
I'm a hard-working man. I wear a steel hard hat. I can ride rope, a hammer and paint, do things with my hands that most men can't.
It's Bob Martin here on today's edition of We the People. We are, in case you missed Aaron live at the top of the hour, we are replaying a show from 5 years ago yesterday. The late Mike Adams was our guest back on March 4th, 2012, and the topic is still very much current on mining. In fact, more current than we even realized. Aaron pointed out after we started the program that there was a reference early on in the show about the comment period with the California Water Board on the suction dredge mining being quote unquote tomorrow. Well, that was 5 years ago, but they're going after them again 5 years later, and the comment period this year with the California Water Board it actually is in fact later on this week, and Aaron will put details and links on that on the We the People website. So now we resume our We the People interview with Mike Adams on suction dredge mining and other things mining here on AM 1460 KCNR.
All the gold.
Our favorite song.
We love it.
California is in a bank in the middle of Beverly Hills in somebody else's name. So if you're dreaming about California, it don't matter at all.
I can't sing it without laughing.
Before California's a brand new game.
Hey, when you're last on the list of everything, it is a new game.
It is a new game. It's like, I don't like a bad game. It's like, hey, I know what it is. It's called Keep Away.
There
I remember
you
that
go.
Game.
I do too.
Yeah, remember that game?
Yeah.
I didn't like it then either.
Tetherball and Foursquare. Okay, back with Mike Adams.
Don't forget dodgeball.
Mike, were you singing? I didn't hear you singing.
If he was singing, he wouldn't have been able to hear us. How fun would that be?
The rule is if we play the All the Gold in California song, we have to sing along.
It's not in the bank in Beverly Hills. I have some over here in the creek.
Don't tell anybody. So you were going to tell us what the cost of an EIS is, and actually what an EIS is. And also, I think people need to understand that the reason
that we've got this show
on this particular Sunday is because there's an open comment period that ends soon.
That's correct. So an EIS is an environmental impact statement, okay? And this current one, I don't know exactly what the price tag is. I think they were granted something like, if I'm not mistaken, and I could be grossly mistaken, something like $1.2 million.
Holy Toledo.
That's a sit-down and shut-up right there.
Yeah. What an EIS does is it looks at all the available scientific studies and documents that relate to a particular activity, okay? It also takes into account public input, oftentimes hearsay evidence, and it looks at the general overall impact of a particular activity upon the environment or upon species, and makes a determination as to whether any harm's being done. Now, the final EIS is not out yet. We only have a draft EIS, and now we have, on the 17th of February, they released their proposed regulations. And then we have a comment period which closes on March 5th. this is just slightly over a two-week period, which I kind of question about the lack of input time. But there's a whole list of new regulations they're proposing, a whole list of stream closures. It goes on and on and on. And I, if you will, I'd like to read some of the comments that I'm making to the proposed regulations. Kosher?
Do it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Do we have enough information in the pipeline so far that it'll make sense for people?
I hope so.
Okay. Because we have time, so no panic.
Okay.
Off you go. Read away. Right.
My general statement starts off with this is, or excuse me, it is clear that these proposed regulations have been written with a complete disregard to federal and state constitutional protections. Furthermore, it illustrates your lack of even the most rudimentary grasp of mining law. It is a clear abuse of power and abridgment of the oath of office to uphold and defend the Constitution, state, and federal. It is a clear and prejudicial attempt to placate environmental interests that have to date failed to show any harm by the mining community. These proposed regulations are also an over-enforcement and misinterpretation of AB 120. AB 120 requires that, quote, new regulations fully mitigate all identified significant environmental impacts, end quote. The draft EIS has failed to identify any significant impact. Most of all, impacts were identified as de minimis or of little impact. Instead, you've chosen to regulate for might, may, could. This is not in keeping with the intent nor the spirit of the law. Now, we get into some of this stuff, for instance, the fact that they want to limit the number of participants to 1,500. My comment basically is when did we, the people, grant you the right to regulate what vocation we can work in or how many of us can work in that vocation? Yeah, you have to understand, to a lot of us, this is what we do for a living. And now the state has said, well, you know, we think we only should have 1,500 people that do this job. You know, what's next? They're going to limit the number of electricians or carpenters or auto mechanics? This is not within their power to regulate. And I believe that this is an unconstitutional taking under the First Amendment.
And before we...
We've got a report card that we have to have.
Okay.
And we've got, interestingly enough, it must be kept on our person at all times.
Oh, geez, you're kidding.
Well, okay. You know, I got no problems. I'll fill it out.
Here's what's going to happen.
And I'll keep it on my person.
You have to understand that
I work underwater.
There will come a day when everyone will have to have their papers on them.
That's right. This is a report card. And my question is are you going to use this for any kind of law enforcement? If you do, then you have made me incriminate myself, and that's an abridgment of my Fifth Amendment rights. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We're not saying. Sorry, we're claiming the Fifth. Tried to lure us in there. That was a trick question, wasn't it?
It was a trick question. They have decided
that a constitutional test right
nozzle,
there.
Is the maximum size without special permission. And here's the catch. You got to get an on-site inspection, and then you must comply with all the 1602 requirements.
Dun, 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 dun.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, that's like bad music here. I read 1602. I was reading the list of the requirements, and we should just let people know also on the WeThePeopleRadio.us page, we'll put some stuff on there. I found a video that shows suction dredge mining, and I sent it to Mike for his approval or for a better video,
mm-hmm.
so people can go on there and look and see what this actually looks like. And we'll also put this draft legislation. And Mike, if you're cool, that we'll put a copy of your letter on there as well.
Oh, absolutely.
To give people something to go from.
I'll send you the final here.
Okay.
Here's another little piece that they have in here. It says, no person shall remove or damage stream side vegetation during suction dredge operations. All right? So, by their standard, if I step on a blade of grass, I'm in violation of the regs.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Rafters aren't held to this. Isn't this unequal application of the law?
I mean, anybody that's near a stream bed is going to step on grass.
Yeah. And let's see.
Unless you spray it down with herbicide ahead of time, which is bad.
You can't have more than, you can only have one dredge for every 500 feet.
Oh.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So, as we said, this is private property. So, I can't operate my dredge within five, if I operate up at the edge of my property, and the next owner wants to operate close to that same edge, who gets precedence?
Yeah.
Here's a conflict. You're saying we can't operate in the same, you know, in the same stretch of river.
You guys all meet down at the saloon in Happy Camp and duke it out like they did in the olden days. Draw straws, I guess. Man.
Well, here's an interesting one, too. Material may only be moved within the current water line. No boulders or other material may be moved outside the current water line.
Would that include minerals that you're mining for?
Well, that's other material, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much you can look around and you can touch it, but then you got to leave it there.
Well, that's kind of the point now.
Huh. That's sufficient.
An interesting point. You can claim a whole list of locatable minerals. On my claims, the claim owner that owns the claim upstream from me, his claim isn't claimed for gold. It's claimed for a rock, a gem-quality rock, called Antigorite Serpentine. It occurs in large boulders. Now, here they're saying, I can't remove a boulder. Well, that's what the claim is all about.
So, if we were to trace this back, follow the money, who's behind this?
The original complaint comes from the Department of Natural Resources of the Karuk Tribe.
The Karuk Tribe?
The Karuk Tribe.
Now, didn't I read somewhere today that somebody involved in administration of that tribe was found to have embezzled $900,000 that was supposed to be used?
Those were environmental scientists, and they ripped off the Yuroks.
Yeah. Oh, it's the Yuroks. Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. And it was supposed to be used for studying the spotted owl?
We got to keep our circular firing squads in order.
Well, the circular firing squad, the Karuk tribe has been investigated by the FBI on multiple occasions for mismanagement of not only federal funds but grant funds. It's alleged that they have large bank accounts in offshore banks, okay? They are funded with millions of dollars every year, and yet most of the people don't see it. Okay, and there again, we have the equal access to justice law that says they can sue us and that we have to reimburse them. Okay? So, no, it's the original complaint came from the Karuk tribe. They're the ones that alleged they were killing fish. But they've yet to come up with a dead fish, you know. Also, as an interesting note, that when they proposed listing of the coho salmon, the dredge regulations were inspected at that point in time, and multiple scientists were asked, does suction dredge mining pose a hazard to these newly listed fish? And 201, they said no, that given the seasonal restrictions and certain closures at times of certain spawning areas, we pose no threat to the coho salmon, and yet that seems to be the thing that they say we're killing.
Lovely. Hey, Mike, we're going to take a really swift break, and when we come back, we need to let folks know about the mercury, because that's a biggie. That's one that they are always throwing out there that kind of people go, oh, yeah, that's a bad thing. We better cut them off. There, you know, anything that people would hear that really just a little bit of information would dispel the myth, we've got to make sure we hit those, and that was on my list of things to do. So we are coming back with Mike Adams. We're talking about suction dredge mining, and basically we're talking about property rights. So we hope you will rejoin us here at WeThePeopleRadio.us. You are listening to KCNR, 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
In a cavern down by canyon, excavating for a mine, there lived a miner from North Carolina and his daughter, Chubby Clementine.
She got the gold mine,
she got the gold mine.
They split it right down the middle, and then they give her the better half. Well, it all sounds sort of funny, but it hurts too much to laugh. She got the gold mine, I got the share.
You gotta love Ray Stevens.
Actually, that's Jerry Reed.
Jerry Reed, okay. They kind of sound alike.
Don't tell Jerry Reed that.
I won't.
Don't tell Jerry Reed fans
I love that
either.
Song. That's so classic.
That is pretty funny.
Mining, divorce.
Mike doesn't know anything about that, though.
Well, I am getting the shaft, so I...
But see, the thing is, you're getting the shaft, but you're not getting a divorce from the government. See, you're getting the shaft twice.
It's going to go on?
Yeah, it's going to just keep going.
They're not letting you claim irreconcilable differences.
And I would like...
Maybe it'll work out and they'll move to Texas.
How about I withdraw my consent to be governed?
There you go.
Maybe we have to move to Texas. The music always gets us so distracted. Talk to us about mercury, Mike. Somebody focus on the topic.
Did you know it's a good thing, or they wouldn't put it in our light bulbs?
And we wouldn't need to wear hazmat suits to take care of those. Yeah.
Well, you know, years ago, the 1800s, the miners used copious amounts of mercury to try to recover the gold.
Why?
Well, because mercury has an affinity for gold.
Ooh.
It also has an affinity for copper.
Oh. So it's like a magnetic kind of thing.
Yeah, it's just attractive.
That's neat.
We don't know why, but it happens.
Did not know that. I mean, about the mercury.
We're talking about the birds and the bees now. Now we've moved over into a different topic with other regulations. We better stick to gold mining.
Okay, I was going to use a different
what he thinks about contraception.
Money and women, but that's, you know.
Bob's trying to veer us off into contraception. Bob. I got to watch him every minute.
Lots of mercury, okay? They didn't realize that it was hazardous or toxic substance. But so, it as a result, a lot of mercury ended up in the environment, in the rivers and whatnot. And probably where this is going to lead to is the Department of Water Quality.
Oh, no.
And I talked to the guy who initiated this study. And he said it really came out as a kind of an interesting question. They said, well, how much mercury do dredges recover? And so they talked to a dredge manufacturer, and he said, oh, well, we recover 100%. And they said, well, how do you know that? Have you ever tested it? And the manufacturer admitted, no, he never tested it, but it just had to be. So Department of Water Quality just couldn't leave things well enough alone, and they contacted BLM and had their inspection dredge come and do a study in a known mercury hotspot. Okay? Now, this is a place where you stick your head in the water and you can see the mercury dancing around on the bedrock. Okay? This is This is an area that is heavily contaminated with mercury. I mean, extremely heavily contaminated with mercury. And so they had the BLM dredge come in. Now, you have to understand that this particular dredge did what we call assessment work, where they checked, remember the prudent man rule about a prudent man must be able to make a living off of a claim. When they want to disprove a claim, they brought this particular dredge in, did some assessment work to decide whether a man could make a living off the claim. And we had a lot of people claiming up pieces of ground that don't hold any gold. But at any rate, so this dredge came in, and it's improperly set up and has had complaints about its recovery percentages complained all along. They improperly set up the dredge, and they did an experiment. And what they came up with is this improperly set up dredge recovered 98% of the mercury.
Wow.
The problem lies is that last 2% that it lost is considered, it was over the threshold limit for hazardous waste. Okay? It's not good that we take out 90%. It's bad that we lose 2%. You know, so this is what we're being judged by. The 2% it lost, even though it was not properly set up, you know, any gold miner who knows what he's talking about, will tell you, we don't recover all the gold and we don't recover all the mercury. But 98% is a pretty good percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
Yeah, it's like the one fish that got away.
This is a hot spot. It's just really loaded with mercury. And so they have decided to take this one hot spot and apply that statistic over the whole system. I don't see how that's fair.
Yeah, no kidding.
So there is the first hitch in the giddy up.
Okay, well, that explains why, because I had heard before that in the upstream, there was more mercury content than downstream from suction dredge mining, but that they were mining operations, but they were talking about closing down the operations because it was stirring up the mercury. And I was thinking, what are they talking about? So that actually makes sense. But
now,
I can't.
We need to look at another conclusion it drew that is false.
Okay.
They spoke about the methylization of mercury. Mercury comes in many forms, okay? Mercury comes in a mercury oxide. It's called cinnabar, which is raw form of mercury. And it's just a pretty red rock, okay? It comes in a free form of pure mercury. It comes in a form of mercury oxide, which is, I don't know if you'll admit that you played with mercury as kids and covered pennies.
Did it.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And the mercury oxide is that funny scum that floats on top of the mercury.
Okay.
And then there's a thing called methyl mercury. And methyl mercury is formed by anoxic, in other words, without oxygen, anoxic bacteria action. Okay? And when in an oxygen-deprived environment, when this bacteria attacks the mercury, it forms it into methyl mercury, and methyl mercury is extremely toxic. It's the mercury that fish pick up and concentrate in their flesh. Same thing for humans, okay? So it is an extremely bad form of mercury, but it forms where there's no oxygen, like on the bedrock underneath tons of sediment. It doesn't form in an oxygen-rich environment, like on the top, after you suck it up with the dredge.
Mm.
Okay, so the other thing they were talking about, that particular dredge was of a design we call a header box or crash box. which is not used much anymore, but it would be particularly prone to taking large globs of mercury and breaking it into very fine flour, okay? That's not the common form of dredge. So they have drawn some conclusions here that it is better to leave 100% of the mercury on the bottom of the river where it can turn to methyl mercury, rather than remove 98% of it, okay, and take it out of the environment, and the other 2%, well, you're right, it's going to get transported. It's going to get transported on my 6-inch dredge, that would be about 30 feet downstream.
Hmm.
Okay? We're not talking about kicking it up and floating it down, you know, from the High Sierras all the way down to the Delta.
Yeah, it's
We're
not going
to
start flying out of.
Feet.
Yeah, it's not going to start flying out of people's faucets. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Time for the news. 5 minutes of news, folks. You can catch up with what's happening currently. We'll be right back with you.
More of We the People straight ahead this Sunday morning here on KCNR Shasta Readings.